So today is the fourth and final Sunday in the Christian season of Advent. This is the four-Sunday period of preparing and waiting and anticipating the coming of the Christ. And I'll be using some traditional Christian theological words this morning because I want to share with you some ideas that are rich with significance. But I'm also going to break them down and share with you how I translate them into words that you and I might find more meaningful. So in our opening hymn, we sang the words to an ancient Advent carol, O come, Emmanuel. The name Emmanuel literally means God with us. It's a song of longing and anticipation of the coming of a Redeemer, a Christ, who would reconcile humanity with God. Or put another way, who would bring people into direct knowledge of divine love. It was believed that the coming of this foretold Messiah would release humanity from the captivity of sin, which is another way of saying free us from all that has kept us from knowing and living in the truth of our inherent worthiness of unconditional and unlimited love. Christ comes from the Greek Christos and means anointed one. It refers to a person chosen by God for the special task of bringing God's message to humanity. It's the equivalent of the word Messiah in Hebrew. And Jesus was recognized by those who heard and believed his message as the Christ, the one who showed the world what God made manifest in human form would be like, a pure soul, a justice maker, a teacher, and a healer. As I've continued along my spiritual journey, I find it more meaningful to understand the Christ not as one man who lived long ago, but rather that Christ's energy is the potential for spiritual enlightenment that dwells in each one of us. In our tradition, we often say that every night a child is born is a holy night. We believe that each child comes pre-installed with the capacity to know and live and teach the pure message of divine love. We all try our best anyway. But for many people, Jesus was a shining exemplar of the full embodiment of divinity. Now, I don't consider myself a Christian exactly. I think others have also shown that light of love, but I find Jesus' teachings to be solid spiritual truth. Early in his teaching career, Jesus was questioned and challenged by the contemporary wise spiritual teachers of his time. And as it's written in the Gospel of Mark, it says, one of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. And noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, of all the commandments, which is the most important? The most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. And later on, when his disciples ask Jesus about the characteristics of good people, the people who will be recognized as righteous in the second coming, Jesus tells them, and this is from Matthew, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. He said basically, the kingdom of heaven is reserved for those who respond to the indwelling Christ in those people who are considered the least of these, which means the least known, the poorest, the most despised and afflicted, the people who seem other or alien, the strangers. Now, biblical scholars argue that in the New Testament, the words for stranger and neighbor are in fact synonyms, which means that the golden rule, love your neighbor as yourself, refers not just to the people who you know, your neighbors in a conventional sense, but also to the people you do not know. We should see everyone as the Christ enfleshed. Now, the Nativity story is a story of a stranger born in a strange land. Mary and Joseph were no longer with their people when they traveled to Bethlehem, and there was no one there to greet them and to take them in. And so, and then soon after Jesus was born, the family made a difficult choice to travel across the border to keep Jesus safe from a violent and vengeful king who was out to harm him. His family was like so many families are today, fleeing violence and seeking safety, seeking asylum in a foreign land. It is my understanding, my spiritual understanding, that we are all one in the highest, most true sense. It's captured best in the one-word greeting and blessing common in India, namaste. The divine spark, the God part of me, sees and recognizes and honors that divine spark, that God energy that is in you. When looked at from the higher perspective, from the God's eye view, there is no such thing as a stranger. We are all one people, all of us neighbors. Each of us is having a different life experience, sure, and those differences can feel really important. But our underlying awareness, the ground of our being, is the same. Now, it's easier to see that unity, that oneness with people who are more like us. I can more easily see the divinity in my sweet friends and family and partners, and I see it even and maybe most especially in my dog. It's much harder to see and to recognize and honor the divinity in somebody who is causing harm or somebody who is almost universally reviled, or people who are actively carrying out acts that by anyone's definition are purely evil. Repulsed by the hatred, we reflexively respond with hatred of our own. But as righteous as it might feel, it does no good to hate. It's a waste of our precious life force energy to direct hatred at anyone. Remember, the least of these includes the most despised and afflicted. The truth is that these people deserve our compassion, for they are lost. They are deluded by the cloud of unreality of their own making. They are the most distant from the truth. But having compassion for them doesn't mean that we don't also stop them from causing harm to other people. It is a loving gesture to take scissors away from a toddler, even when they throw a tantrum. Preventing someone from causing harm is an act of love for everyone involved. So what I'm talking about here is moral clarity. We do not need to condemn a person who is so lost from the truth that they are harming themselves and other people. We certainly don't participate in any way with their unreality, and we don't grant their faulty ideas the same legitimacy as the truth. We simply need to stop them and continue to keep pointing out the truth with clarity. People who are not in reality deserve love like everyone else. But they have built walls within themselves which prevent love from reaching their heart. Because of that, their ability to love and be loved is hampered. It's broken. It's impaired. It's sick. When there is a sickness in a living body, there is a defense system, right? An immune response. Our bodies send white blood cells. We create inflammation and swelling and fever to destroy the invading germ and to protect tissues. The alarm is sounded. The body's systemic defense system is engaged. We know now that there's always a certain amount of germs in our environment, and we encounter them all the time. But when our defenses are low, or there are too many, we can be overwhelmed, invaded, taken down, breached. Health requires good boundaries, clarity, the ability to discern properly functioning cells from improperly functioning cells. Health requires truth. The immune response brings the system back into balance and ease. It restores normal, healthy, harmonious functioning. When there is a sickness in a system, in a society, there is a cultural immune response system. I see this cultural immune response happening all around us now. I see it in the protests against the separation of families and the caging of children. I got to experience being a part of it when I participated in the Love Knows No Borders action down in Friendship Park on December 10th, and it felt good and right and true. The cultural immune response is happening all around the world. I just came across this remarkable story. In the Netherlands, there's a little Protestant church that has held a continuous worship service for 60 days to prevent the deportation of an Armenian family that is seeking asylum. The family left Armenia 9 years ago after receiving death threats over the father's political activism. So the family lives in an apartment in this church, and they can't go outside without risking arrest. Under an obscure Dutch law, authorities are not permitted to conduct operations for the duration of a worship service. So for 1,440 hours and counting, the worship in the Bethel Church has not ceased. Over 450 clergy from all denominations around the country have taken turns. And now, as the news is spreading beyond the Netherlands, clergy from around the world are coming in to lead portions of this marathon service in a sort of pious filibuster relay. Part of the cultural immune response is telling the truth. A healthy society calls one another back to being firmly rooted in reality. Because what those who are out of reality try to do is to pull others into their cloud of chaos with them. They create confusion by saying that facts aren't true, that truth is relative. They instill doubt and fan our deepest fears to create divisions among people. They create major disruptions and distractions, make outlandish demands, and generally wreak havoc so that people don't pay attention the moment they try to steal what they really want in plain sight. Resistance to cultural sickness requires seeing the truth clearly. Comedians have a vital role in times like this. They help us remember what is actually true by pointing out the absurdities. We laugh because, aha, we can see the truth. And it always feels good when that happens, when what has become a little bit blurry becomes crystal clear again. They help us get back into reality. The cultural immune system fights the invasion of hatred by residing firmly in the truth of love, refusing to be bullied or cowed or distracted. Together, we fight the creep of cultural sickness by refusing to succumb to fear and hatred, being radically and deeply loving to one another, to people we know and people we don't, is an act of profound resistance. We, the people of love, become the culture's immune response system. So as we move out of the waiting period of Advent and into the promise of hope and joy and peace of Christmas, let us rededicate ourselves to living the message that Jesus so clearly and unambiguously articulated: love God above all else and love your neighbor, which means everyone. There are no strangers on earth. I love you. Amen and blessed be.